Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
Welcome back, folks. We know now that you've probably heard that the consent decree relative to the New Orleans Police Department here in the city of New Orleans has come to an end. And joining us is Jonathan Aroney, consent decree monitor. Jonathan Aroney, consent decree monitor, NOPD leader of and from the Shepard Mullen Organizational Integrity Group. Jonathan, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. 12 years and 2 months ago, you were appointed as the monitor by U.S. District Court Judge Susie Morgan. Did you ever think that you would be here that lengthy period of time?
No, I did not.
So what does that mean as it relates to the process and what you guys have been able to accomplish over that period of time?
Well, I think Judge Morgan said it well at the proceeding yesterday, that the transformation of the culture of the department has really been remarkable, and no one approached it as a box-checking exercise. They approached it as making real, meaningful, durable changes, and that took a while, but they did it. So I was very proud yesterday to be able to stand up at that proceeding and congratulate them for what they achieved.
It seemed to me, and you correct me if I'm wrong, I mean, you were down into the bowels of this for a long, long time, right?
That
we went through periods of being kind of stuck on stuck. And then all of a sudden there would be this breakthrough. And I mean, the advances would be, you know, like almost record shattering. And it seemed that we reached that point and it just kept improving and building and building upon itself. Your thoughts about that observation?
No, that is a very astute observation. I think, well, you're exactly right. We went through times of less cooperation by the department and the city, and that slowed things down. And we had times of terrific cooperation by the department and the city, and that sped things up. What was interesting is throughout the whole thing, that the officers, the rank and file, the supervisors, the managers, they never stopped working. So even where there were slowdowns kind of above their pay grade, the folks doing the work continue to do the work, and they should be very proud of that.
In your final report, you left some additional recommendations, I guess, or work to be done, and you outline them in your executive summary. Is that kind of traditional to do that at the closure of a consent decree?
You know, to be honest with you, Neil, I'm not sure because I don't.
Each one stands on its own
for a living, right? Yeah. So what I can say is that it was very important to my team that we left the city with a report that can be used as a roadmap by the department, by elected leaders, and frankly, by the community and the watchdogs like you and others to follow that roadmap should they choose to. And, you know, we hope people want to continue the progress and want to continue to hold the department accountable. And I like to think that report will give them some leverage to do so.
And I found in a lot of what you left as it relates to this has a lot to do with transparency, obviously cooperation amongst all the parties, and the infrastructure set up from those that are kind of the watchdogs, the formal watchdogs internally, and then more importantly, about accountability. That's not because there's any concern there. It's just maybe the observation of some best practices that you would like to see implemented.
Well, I think it's fair to say that there are concerns, but not NOPD-driven concerns. There are concerns because when we look around the country and we see the ebbs and flows of reform efforts and we see other cities who have ended their kind of reform efforts and then backslid, that I'm trying to draw from those examples to help prevent New Orleans from suffering their fate. So no, I'm not worried about New Orleans today with the current leadership and the current structures, but you and I both know that departments change when leaders change. And, you know, I really wanted there to be a roadmap that hits, like you said, accountability and transparency, so future leaders understand what's expected of them.
There was somewhere in the report, and I know I outlined it, I just cannot find it at the present time.
I'm talking about
the closeout report that you did. That kind of struck me. Tell the story about Officer Sally, and you talk about, you know, this violation of policies, and that separate and apart from just management in general. And if you would, for the benefit of the listening audience, it seems that you grabbed onto something I interpreted as that you thought that there was not enough educational opportunity, training, or the like about just basic management principles, and it's just not about looking for a violation of a specific policy.
Yeah, and you know, I'm really glad you honed in on that, and I suspect it probably sung to you a little bit, because I bet you have watched people in your organization struggle with the same thing. But policing over the years has become very driven by policy. If you violate a policy, you get in trouble. When the internal affairs groups look at things, they ask, did you violate a policy? But, you know, in the broader business world at large, we look at things beyond a policy. We look at, are you doing a good job? Are you living the company's, the corporation, the entity's values? You know, are your actions aligned with the institution's actions? So you can have folks who are not doing what they should be doing, but they're not specifically violating a policy. And this is a gap, frankly, I see in law enforcement across the U.S. And yeah, I think that we meaning law enforcement generally, need a better focus on management versus discipline.
Yeah, I actually, as I read through the report, and I read through the entire thing last evening.
I'm impressed.
And some of it even twice. Well, I think I owe you the respect of reading, you know, what if I'm going to interview you, I owe you the respect to read what you guys have put out. I thought that was one of the most important observations that you made in your report and drawing that distinction. And I agree with you. I think it's something where we have failed over the past several decades in understanding the difference. I often told the men and women of the JPSO that the entity's interest always outweighs the individual. And for many, they never really understood that. You know, and they don't really get it. And you kind of did this analogy that really, I think, drives it home for many folks. And we see that, and not to bring up, you know, a bad example, but we see that right now. We're living it with this overtime abuse issue that we have that has come up. I kind of said that the only way that that can foster itself is that there's a protection racket going on, meaning there's a supervisor that's not supervising, right? And, you know, so when you have a failure in the basic requirements of managing, the outcomes typically are not really pretty, are they?
Oh, no, you are so right. And, you know, this was the reason why we focused on something, and I don't even think this was specifically called for in the initial consent decree, but the New Orleans Police Department proposed this to solve a problem. What was happening was an individual would be investigated for some sort of policy violation, but no one in the department would look at the responsibility of the supervisors, right? What did the supervisors do or not do that might have led to the problem? And it was a huge gap. So I think it was about halfway through the consent decree, the police department created a serious discipline review board that separate from the discipline process. They have leadership saying, okay, how did this happen? Why did this happen? Who might have been responsible? Who wasn't doing their job? You know, the military has done this for decades, but NOPD had not. And it ties directly to your point, Neil, that we need to ask. That these things don't happen in a vacuum, right? We need to ask what structures, what action, and what lack of action allowed this to take place.
You know, I went so far as to say in a monologue the other day, guys, read the room. What are you thinking? I mean, it's embarrassing. You know, you're 12 years, 2 months into a consent decree, and we're here. We're at the bitter end. We should all be celebrating, you know, bells and whistles going off, a release of non-aluminum balloons or whatever they call them, and everything else. And here we are, we're talking about overtime abuse. And, and I said the same thing. I said, you know, we ought to be looking at the supervisors because in my view, that whole landscape and the culture starts with a failure to supervise. It's just I have a strong feeling about that. And I think it starts right there. It festers. It becomes a cancer, and then it's out of control. And then everybody wants to react, and a lot of times we overreact instead of just getting down to the basics.
Yeah, I think that's right. I'm sure you know this well better than I do. But there's a saying that I've learned in policing that change succeeds or fails at the level of the sergeants. Right. Mm-hmm. You can have an organization filled with enlightened, forward-thinking, top-level leaders, but it's that role of first-line supervisors that you really gotta win the hearts and minds of. And NOPD has done a very good job doing that. Obviously, not a perfect job, but everyone's got to remember that policing is complicated, just like almost every other profession. You know, the medical profession isn't perfect either, so we have to expect there to be some unfortunate incidents. The real question is, how does the department handle them? Do they lean in? Do they accept responsibility? Do they fix it? Do they hold supervisors accountable? Or, like in the old days for NOPD, do they sweep things under the rug?
Yeah, well, I firmly believe that there were a lot of inroads that were made and a lot of things successfully achieved. And I think you see it in just, one of the byproducts of pulling pieces and parts together is when you think about the investigatory process. You know, the NOPD for a long time, their clearance rate was below the national average. And then all of a sudden, as, things started to move along, I think here with the consent decree in a much healthier fashion at a much quicker pace, damn it, what you saw was an increase in clearance rates and things starting to align. And we were connecting dots and we were following through on tasks that weren't followed through before. That's a byproduct of something, right? And for me, I think it was a byproduct of an improvement in supervision.
I think you're right. I think there's no question about this. And for those who take the time you did to look at the report, you'll see a list of achievements, structural changes that help supervisors do their job where they want to do their job, right? It's hard if a supervisor is intent on not doing it. Well, they shouldn't be a supervisor at all. But those who want to do a good job have so many more tools. And you're exactly right what you say. Without supervision, the whole law enforcement model fails.
Yeah. Well, I love, there's a paragraph in here, and I highlighted it because I love the way that it's just worded. It says, treat integrity as something greater than compliance. While policy requirements are one way to think about what it means to do the right thing, it is important to remember that what is right often goes beyond policy. It often reflects a combination of moral, ethical, legal, cultural, and other normative values. NOPD's future leaders should focus on integrity as much as compliance. I could not agree more. And I mean, the failure as it relates to integrity, the failure of a moral compass will be the failure of a whole lot of things that the NOPD and other law enforcement agencies are called upon to do.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. And law enforcement agencies, in my humble opinion, have to stop shying away from the integrity issue because they can't find a discrete policy violation. I mean, I over the years with the department, early on, I saw officers who absolutely shouldn't have been officers. And yet, because they didn't violate a policy, they stayed on the department. And ultimately, you know, their colleagues and they and others in the department paid the price for that. So I am with you 100% that integrity is the word.
Jonathan, do you have a few more minutes to spend with us?
Yeah, absolutely. No, this is fun. Okay. You and I met early on in the consent decree, and it's good to talk to you again.
Absolutely. We got to get to a break. We're visiting with Jonathan Aronne, consent decree monitor, NOPD leader there, and he's with the Shepard Mullen Organizational Integrity Group. We will be right back, folks. Stay with us.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
Welcome back, folks. We're visiting with Jonathan Aronne, the consent decree monitor of the NOPD, and he's with the Shepard Mullen Organizational Integrity Group. They issued their final report on November 19th for the consent decree monitor for the New Orleans Police Department consent decree, and we're going through same. Jonathan, I wanted to cover one other point about that integrity passage. You know, it seems to me that there's not enough discussion in law enforcement circles across the country about credibility. And without credibility, we're not able to really do the mission that we're hired for. Your thoughts?
Are you talking about credibility of the department or their ability
both
to
both the department and the individual officers? Both.
Yeah. You know, I'm pausing only because it's interesting. It took us a long time in New Orleans to try to teach the officers how to assess credibility when they conduct internal investigations. So it's interesting that you're pointing out credibility here. It was a surprisingly hard hill for them to climb. And I wonder if that ties into your credibility question here. But, you know, directly to your question, I do not think there is enough discussion of credibility. The departments, and I, one of the speakers at yesterday's proceeding said something very close to this. I think it might have been Nick Gernon. But departments only have power, not through force, but through their credibility, through the trust that the department chooses to place in them. And he said it better than I did just now. But he's right, and you're right. Without that, everything goes to heck. And it creates a significant danger for the officers. Everything we did in New Orleans had to follow a very basic rule, in my view. It needed to be good for the community and good for the officers. And I actually think that's one of the reasons NOPD was so successful, because we focused on things that were good for everybody. And credibility is a good example, right? What officer wants to roll up into a neighborhood and ask people to, you know, tell them what they saw if they, the officers, have no credibility?
Yeah. You know, we're really, at the end of the day, in the credibility business, because without it, you know, we're not able to really prosecute crimes. We're not able to take the stand. We're not able to do a whole lot of things if we have this checkered past where we didn't exercise and do the right thing in order to have the credibility to get on the stand. And, you know, so, you know, I used to tell folks all the time, we don't fudge in an investigation. The beauty of criminals is they tend to be fairly stupid. They're going to do it again. We'll get them the next time. You know, we don't have to push the edges of the envelope to make a case against somebody, because I can promise you they're doing it again, and they typically
right, and
do.
Push,
and we'll get them.
Yeah, and you
we'll get them the next time. No, go ahead.
You're exactly right. And what happens is you push the envelope, and I know I'm preaching the choir here. You push the envelope in order to get one bad guy. You risk the loss of your credibility to lose the next 10 bad guys.
Sure. Absolutely. And we see that all the time. It sets me off the rails, you know, and it's like,
yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Yep.
You got to play the long game. You, in your report, you had a miscellaneous section, paragraph H. And along the lines of what we've just been talking about, I've always been mystified and confused and head-scratcher relative to some civil service findings on disciplinary actions that were taken by the NOPD. And you think, you know, you hear what the way that they conducted their internal investigation. You see the outcome. It makes sense. It looks like they connected all the dots. They did all the things right. And then civil service reverses the decision that's made. And I'm like, oh, my God, what were they thinking about? And you obviously, I'm kind of curious what motivated you here. And so for the benefit of the listening audience, I'm going to read what you say. You said, over the course of the consent decree, we have seen the importance of the civil service system. At the same time, we have seen that system has overturned good discipline decisions made by the NOPD. We recommend the Civil Service Commission consider ways to ensure that the commission identifies and takes action against political interference in police accountability process, and B, overturns the disciplinary decisions only where clear evidence compels the decision to do so. I interpret that you have some of the same doubt that I have about how civil service is conducting itself in some of these cases.
Yes, I think I do. And as you just read, there were two pieces to this. And you know, when I first got here way back 2013, I wasn't sure how I felt about civil service, frankly. But, you know, over the years, having seen some political interference from time to time, I realized that the civil service was important. At the same time, I have the saying, two things can be true. At the same time, I saw NOPD make what my team thought were really good, strong, hard decisions. And then I saw civil service overturn them because they weren't certain. And, you know, administrative matters are not based on certainty. As you know, they're based on a preponderance of the evidence. And that was very unfortunate because what it created, it actually created fear in the New Orleans Police Department to do what was right sometimes for fear of being overturned. And that led to some negative consequences over the years. Now, I think NOPD doesn't have that fear anymore. Their view, and I champion this, is they do what they need to do, what is right, when it is right, and whatever other folks do is up to them.
Yeah, I mean, you almost have to take that attitude, right? I mean,
yeah.
Otherwise, you foster that cancer in the underbelly of the organization. And if it's allowed to fester, it permeates throughout. And it's hard to remedy it. It's hard to sanitize it, so to speak, and move forward. And, I mean, you obviously saw that over the 12 years you were here.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. And I'm very, very proud that ultimately NOPD overcame that, and they did make the hard decisions. They did impose the proper discipline. And like I say, if civil service or your local court's going to overturn it, so be it. But NOPD did its job.
Yeah. Obviously this, you know, I believe in timing is everything. And the fact that this comes to an end at this point in time, I think, is incredibly important. We have new leadership coming in, and new members on the council, a new mayor. Obviously, an opportunity to do a number of different things in a different approach. And I don't mean from a political perspective, but just from an operational perspective, where. You know, another opportunity to kind of look ourselves in the mirror critically and figure out who we are, what we're about, and where we're headed. Your thoughts?
I think you're right. I think to be clear, as I said at the proceeding yesterday, it is ending now because NOPD did its job. Like it's ending now for no other reason, and it is fortuitous that it is also ending at a time where, as you said, there's new blood on the city council. There is a new mayor coming in. We have a relatively new chief still. And this is such a pivotal time where we all should be looking to see if people are going to, you know, live up to their promises with respect to continuing the progress that the department has made.
Yeah, it was, how would you sum up yesterday? Obviously, you made in your report, you said, you know, it's kind of, I guess, and I'll just summarize it, I guess it's kind of bittersweet because you say there's not a day that went by that you weren't thinking about the NOPD.
Yeah, on a personal level, it's bittersweet, but it's mostly exciting. I've spent a lot of time down here, and while I love your city, I love my family more, and I'm very happy to be spending more time with them back at my home. But the other thing tomorrow that I think is so important and was very important for me to say at the proceeding, and I did, was, again, two things can be true. It is a very warranted time to celebrate. NOPD did something that no one thought was possible. But at the same time, there are individuals in the city who have been scarred, sometimes terribly scarred over the years and decades. And those scars are not going to, you know, erase because I stand up in court and say the department as an institution has changed. And I think we have to, at the same time we're celebrating, be sensitive to the fact that not everyone is celebrating.
Yeah, no, that's very much true. And I think you pointed it out many times, and it is so true. And the chief believes this, too, because she's been on my show and she said it as well. The really hard part, right, begins now. It's one thing to attain and achieve and have this go away. But as you pointed out, there's been a number of agencies that have come out of consent decrees that in some cases, in a really scary way, almost immediately started retreating back to their original practices and views. And it's something else that is kind of mind-numbing to me as to how certain cultures within organizations, and this is not unique to policing organizations, where it's so embedded and it's so hidden and it's so present in so many different places that you wouldn't even expect to find it there, but you do, and then it starts to permeate again.
Yeah, you're exactly right. If I hear another person say now NOPD can get back to real policing, I think I'm going to lose it. Constitutional policing is real policing. The New Orleans Police Department has proven that you can fight crime and respect people's rights and respect people at the same time. So I do not buy into the narrative that when consent decree comes to an end, good policing needs to come to an end.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree with you more. And it's a lot of it is the execution, right? The strategy deployed, the priorities articulated by management and others, and staying true to the mission each and every day. The work never goes away. I retired when I retired. The organization got the best that I had to offer. I was getting older. Didn't have the energy set. It's a whole host of things. And it's like, it's time. It's time. When the little things started to really get under my skin, I said, it's time. You move on. Well, let me, on behalf of myself, as well as all of the folks that in our listening audience, thank you for the job that you did, the dedication that you put into this. And obviously, I read every report that y'all ever generated to stay current on the issues. And we appreciate the hard work that was done. But I guess a lot of people, Jonathan, will say, if I'm honest, they're not sad to see you go, my friend.
That doesn't surprise. It doesn't surprise me at all. I'm sure that is true, and I just hope I left folks in a good place with a good roadmap.
Absolutely, I had to just throw that in, just to mess with you, just
right.
A little bit.
It's not lost on me, my friend. Not lost on me.
Jonathan Aroney's consent decree monitor, NOPD leader. He's with Shepherd Mullin Organizational Integrity Group. Whatever the next chore and walk in life is for you, we wish you much success.
Well, thank you. It's been a privilege. It's been a privilege to be on your show, and it's been a privilege to serve the people of New Orleans. Keep up the great work.
Thank you, sir. Have a great holiday season. We'll be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
Stay with us. Folks, just want to remind you that you still have an opportunity to help pack the dome, bring the noise, and beat the Dirty Birds, Atlanta Falcons. Today's the final day to win tickets to the Saints-Falcons game. Score two premium tickets to the game, plus a pair of VIP tailgate passes from Bullseye Event Group. We're talking open bar, premium liquor, all-you-can-eat buffet from celebrity chef Aaron May, all overlooking Champion Square. Winning is easy. Go to WWL.com/contest and enter to win Saints Falcons tickets from Saints Radio WWL. It ends tonight, I think at 11:59 p.m., so you still have a chance to get in there and get a chance to win your tickets. Also want to remind folks, and I oftentimes forget to do this on Thursday, high school football fans, get ready for week 12 of WWL's Manning Family Children's Prepful Football Roundup. Ian Ozan and Coach Lou Valden tomorrow night at 7, live from the Shrine on Airline, and the matchup between John Curtis and St. Thomas More. And it'll also bring you live reports from the other big playoff games, huge games. Acadiana at St. Aug, Archbishop Rummel at Tioga, Northlake, and then Northlake Christian at Dunham, Opelousas at Bell Chase, Jennings at Franklinton, Delta Charter at Riverside, and Slaughter at Jules Sumner. Get ready for more high school playoffs on the Manning Family Children's Prep Football Roundup, which happens to be the most comprehensive coverage of high school football right here on WWL. And we'll be right back, folks. Stay with us. Folks, when we come back after the top of the hour news break, we're going to visit with Rafael Goyeneche, president of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. We'll talk a little bit more about the NOPD consent decree, new sheriff in Orleans Parish, Mayor LaToya Cantrell's request to stay in contact with Jeffrey Vappe, the NOPD overtime and the new policy, and more. So stay with us. We'll be right back with Rafi Goyeneche right here on WWL.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcasts.